Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 65 of NML Crossing, which is a late night edition of the program here because this was Mother's Day weekend and we each have a mother, so we had a lot of running around to do most of the weekend. Mother's Day weekend for us here at the house is, I can't quite call it bittersweet. It's one of the tougher weekends of the year for us. Not having, you know, any children of our own, it's not the best weekend. This year, we managed to kind of sidestep one of the things that we usually run into this weekend. When you don't have kids, people will still say, you know, Happy Mother's Day to women. And when they know you especially, they will... they'll like qualify other things in your life, like, oh, you have dogs, you're a dog mom, you know, you have fur babies or whatever they call it. And nobody's saying that to be jerks. Everybody, their heart's in the right place, but it's still, when that's not what you want to hear, it's not what you want to hear. But this year we were able to sidestep pretty much all of that, which is a good thing. And again, you know, people don't say it to be, you know, to rub salt on any wounds or anything. It's all meant lovingly and in a celebratory sort of way. But like I said, when that's not what you want to hear, that's not what you want to hear. Anyway, today we're going to go from the sublime to the ridiculous. We're going to hop into our second of two issues of Azrael, Agent of the Bat. This is issue number 53 with a June 1999 cover date. The story is called Jellybean Death Trap, written by Denny O'Neill, with pencils by Roger Robinson, inks by James Pasco, colors by Rob Rowe and Alex Blayart, spelt differently than last time, so I don't know which one is right. Letters, Ken Brusenek, edits, L.A. Williams and Mike Carlin. Cover price, $2.25. And this one's got a cover that, boy, I don't like this cover at all. I'm a sucker for covers that have, you know, word balloons on it. You know, I think it's old school. It's kind of cool, you know. This one, though, it's got like the Joker talking to us and he calls us kitties, you know, and it's like, it's kind of cringy. Anyway. Let's get beyond the cover here. We open with the Joker, who's looking a lot like Kramer, you know, like from Seinfeld. Like, I swear that Robinson was using Kramer as a model for this, his take on the Joker. Anyway, the Joker is kvetching about the current state of things in Gotham City. Because naturally, you really can't cause all that much in the way of havoc in a land that's already overrun with it. Now, we get a bit of exposition about how he's no longer in Arkham Asylum, which is to say he pretty much monologues exactly that. Now, from here, our point of view pans out a little bit. Our field of vision expands to reveal that our guy has been pretty busy since his release. He's built himself a very Silver Age looking Rube Goldberg torture device. It's basically a large glass cube with a single chair in it, with a whole bunch of weapons primed to fire, burn, cut, and explode whoever might be sat in it. It's really dorky looking. Anyway, it looks like he built the thing in order to draw Batman out for a confrontation. We shift scenes over to that building where we left our titular hero last time out. And he's looking at a Charaxis-shaped indentation in the snow. It looks like our big bad from last time was able to walk away from falling 4 flights. We still won't ever see him again, so who knows, maybe he left to die. JPV is then approached by Batman. And who boy, has he got a job for old Headsock. He wants Az to temporarily abandon his hunt for Nicholas Scratch and instead focus on finding, not only finding, but also taking down the Joker. You kidding me? Asriel can't keep up with Nick Scratch, and Batman thinks he'll be able to do anything with his archenemy? Okay, Jesus. Anyway, Batman reports that the Joker has taken the Burnley neighborhood and has also taken hostages. He says that while Nick Scratch is in Gotham, he's not currently causing any trouble. So, they ought to just forget about him until he does. Are you kidding? Is Denny even reading his own work at this point? Oh, boy. Asriel claps back, saying that the Joker isn't currently causing any trouble either. Was he not just told he was taking hostages? Maybe Batman was just kidding, because he doesn't even appear to remember saying it himself. And with that, he just swoops out of the scene. He tells Asriel to do the thing, and he's gone. From here, we hop back to Burnley, where the Joker is walking the halls of an apartment building handing out jelly beans. You might think that since this issue is called Jelly Bean Death Trap and how the cover really puts focus on those jelly beans, that this might be leading somewhere. It's not. Joker even talks about how, like, the purple jelly beans cause him to sneeze, which again might make you think we're heading somewhere with these jelly beans. But again, we ain't. Our baddie, he's led to a room by a librarian-looking woman. Inside the room are supposedly three children, though we only see two. And they're sitting before a shattered and powered-off TV set. Like, they're just in chairs staring at broken glass. I don't know. I mean, not even, like, static, you know, like, to make it little, you know, horror movie-esque. It's just they're looking at a broken television screen. Anyway, he gives the tots some jelly beans and warns them about those purple ones. From here, we shift outside, where Asriel is walking down some Burnley streets in his full ugly-ass costume, while some no-man's-landers gawk in his direction. He thinks to himself that Gotham should have done a better job ensuring the impoverished and marginalized were able to get out before shutdown day. He even removes his head sock in order to show us how serious he is about all of this. It's meant to look super dramatic, I think, but it really just comes across as dorky. He questions whether or not he's Asriel or John Paul Valley. And I mean, isn't he both? This isn't some sort of earth-shattering revelation or anything. It's so dumb. I've read a handful of issues of Asriel, and every single issue we get this question. It's, what were they saying last issue during the letters page? Like, it's, we're reading the same issue over and over and over again? It's kind of like that. Anyway, as he stares dramatically off-panel, he's approached by a woman who asks if he's Batman. You friggin' at me. He's wearing white. There's no mask. He's got long blonde hair. You think he's Batman? I mean, I know we're still sorta in urban legend mode here, but come the F on. I mean, okay. Wait, okay. Asriel reaffixes his head sock and says that he's not Batman, clarifying that he hasn't been Batman in over a year. Which, you really think this passerby has any interest in the Nightfall saga? You think she's a fake-ass bat historian? Well, maybe she will be now. Anyway, as dumb luck would have it, she's here to fill our man in about some clown who just came through and asked her to deliver a message to Batman for him. And he also gave her jelly beans. Anyway, the Joker is waiting for Batman to meet with him at Forest Park. Which takes us over to our baddie and a clown-faced heavy. We're in that park, and the Joker tosses a handful of jelly beans in his mouth and sneezes since, well, one of those pesky purples was in that, was in the mix there. His Rube Goldberg death trap is there as well. I'm not sure how he lugged the thing from the warehouse-looking place we just saw it at, but maybe that heavy is very, very strong. Maybe he's got a CDL license. I don't know. Inside the box, the clear box with all the weapons pointed at it, we see what looks like a middle-aged woman sat in the death chair, but it's actually one of those children from the apartment building. The kid asks if the Joker could just let him go, which is a dumb question. Our big bad says the only thing that'll be let go is the kid's soul as it flutters up to heaven. The heavy wonders why there's a kid in the seat in the first place, assuming that it was meant for Batman. Joker says this is just a way to lure Batman to the scene, and I suppose, by extension, the hot seat. And we get a brief tour here of the death trap. There are tons of guns, and what would appear to be Wolverine's adamantium claws, and also a whole bunch of plastic explosive, all pointed at this poor child in the chair. The heavy then draws our attention to a bunch of large sewage pipes laying nearby. The Joker does not care about those pipes, but since they were mentioned in the first place, we might assume this is a case of Chekhov's sewer pipes. And what with the amazing lack of subtlety we've come to expect in the pages of Azrael, we should probably assume just that. Just then, our hero appears and demands the Joker release the kid. Our baddie is, at first, quite excited to be confronted by his sworn nemesis, and is as disappointed as anyone would be when he realizes it isn't Batman who came a-callin'. Instead, it's Azrael. Az punches the heavy, which sends him flying. He then struts toward the Joker with a bunch of tough guy talk. He says he's not there to play games, which he says probably about 30 seconds before agreeing to play games. Joker says if Azrael doesn't climb himself into one of those big-ass sewage pipes, the kid in the box will die many, many, many times over. He says while Az is in the pipes, that heavy is going to... Jesus. He's going to weld metal sheets to either end of the pipe. First, I mean, do we gotta... Joker didn't even realize these pipes, yes? And here we're to assume that there's not only a welding torch, but also perfectly sized metal sheets right there? In the middle of a park? All right. So our man, who just said he wasn't there to entertain the Joker's threats, climbs his head-socked ass into the pipe. And the heavy starts welding, while the Joker continues ranting. Inside the pipe, Azrael rocks himself around to knock the pipe down the hill it just so happened to be precariously balancing on, rolling it into the river below. Once in the drink, JPV is somehow able to free himself. It looks like he cut himself out of a tuna fish can. The heavy says that only one side of the pipe was welded, but the art shows something entirely different. Anyway, from here, Azrael climbs back up the hill, KOs the heavy, and just like in Jingle Bells, Batman smells, the Joker gets away. Azrael then turns his attention to the tot in the box and saves him. This takes us to our close, where JPV is burying his head in shame for, once again, failing the Batman. Only Batman's there to tell him that he did the right thing by saving the child. And I really feel like we're getting different flavors of the same ending every single time out in Azrael. Anyway, that is where we leave it. Next time out, we're hopping back into Anthology Land. It's Batman Chronicles, number 16. So, what do you guys want to talk about? Do we gotta? Yeah, I suppose we ought to. Boy, Azrael's a weird book, isn't it? And I hate repeating myself, he repeats to himself, but this just feels so different from everything else we're getting in the No Man's Land books. This feels like it's a couple of generations removed. It feels just so, just out of step with everything else. And what's more, it's another weird appearance of the Joker in the, you know, early stages of No Man's Land, where I really feel like the first time we see the Joker, and this is the first time he's actually starring, you know, as a featured villain. And it was just, it wasn't very good. I was hoping, and you know, these Azrael book issues are not included in the Abridged Trade collection. And I mean, I think Azrael is, excised completely from, like, the novelization of No Man's Land. Like, Asriel ain't there. There's no Nick Scratch. It's like, all this weird stuff is just not mentioned at all. Which, you know, I don't mind it being there. And, you know, I am having fun talking about how silly this book is, but it feels so inessential. It almost feels like it's happening on Earth 2. You know, it is post-crisis, so there was no Earth 2, but it feels like it's happening on a different Earth, where it's just everything's just a little bit different. I wish they held the Joker back a little bit more. I thought it was cool, like, in The Road to No Man's Land, where he killed all those devil heads. It's like, okay, that's the last thing we see of the Joker until he makes this huge splash in the post, you know, post-Gotham shutdown era. I'd have been cool with that. But so far we've seen him, this is either the third or fourth time we're seeing him, and none of them feel, I really can't say right, because the Joker is what the Joker is, but it just feels very underwhelming, you know, very anticlimactic. And this whole issue being predicated on Jelly Bean. I mean, the Jelly Beans were really, there wasn't much to them. You know, when you draw that much attention to Jelly Beans, especially when you, like, point out a specific color of them, it's like, okay, well, those got to be poisonous, right? Or they got to be, I don't know, something. Maybe they explode, I don't know, but no, it's just, he's the Joker, and the Joker does silly things, and, hey, Jelly Beans are kind of silly, so let's just do that. The Rube Goldberg device here, this is, it feels Silver Age, but, like, not good Silver Age. Like, it just feels like lazy Silver Age. And maybe that was the tone that they were going for. Maybe that was the point. But it didn't make for, I don't know, anything satisfying. It was just a silly thing, just to be silly. Because, I mean, let's play it out like the Joker wanted it. What if Batman did show up? He's going to see this stupid contraption. He's going to knock the Joker out. He's going to knock the heavy out, and he's going to save the kid. And that would have been the end of it. Fortunately for the Joker, Batman sent Asriel. So Asriel climbed into a pipe and was sent into a river. Good grief. Well, I really don't think I have much more to say about this issue. It was something. I don't regret reading it. I don't regret sharing it with you all. But I don't know. I feel like every time we see the Joker, it's like, man, they should have just held him back, and maybe held him back until Harley showed up, you know? Just make the Joker feel a little bit more like the final boss than just the villain of the week, which, I mean, this might as well have been an episode of Batman 66 with stunt casting with Asriel in the role of Batman. Just super silly. I guess, you know, maybe this is a let up for us here. We have all these real downer and gloomy stories in No Man's Land, and then we get this kind of silliness to take the edge off. I don't know. But of course, I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts on Asriel here. Let me know if I'm being too hard on this book, or maybe not hard enough. But speaking of telling me your thoughts, let's hop into the mailbag here. We're going to keep it light today. We're talking about comics, not my tales of woe and silliness. We're going to start with Chris Yu, our good friend here, who says, and this is about the issue of Detective, where Batman summoned the wisdom of Solomon and decided it would probably be best to chop a baby in half. talk about silly Silver Age stuff, right? Anyway, Chris says, seeing that baby in this story makes me think about the ending of this storyline. It probably wasn't meant as foreshadowing, but it feels like that to me. And I don't get that reference. It's been 25 years since I read this, so I don't know. I don't know. Now I'm looking forward to seeing what Chris is talking about there. That's pretty cool. Now, this is a good bit here. Chris says, Alfred posing as a cop in the flashback once again shows him using his previous acting experience to help out his employer. It's kind of a trope, but Bruce and Thomas lead similar lives, even down to how Alfred helps them in a non-butlery way. And I didn't realize that was Alfred in the flashback. I thought Thomas Wayne actually found a cop. I didn't realize that was Alfred. Boy, talk about being out to lunch. Well, you know, that revelation makes me like that story a little bit more. It makes a little bit more sense to me because I was sitting there scratching my head like an idiot. Like, why is this pharmacist just, like, taking this? And why isn't this cop asking more questions? But it was Alfred. It was Alfred. The butler did it. It was Alfred all along. Oh, boy. I have been out to lunch of late. Chris continues. He says, the most interesting bit to me is the penguin and the food dates. Was this can a part of some other gang lord's back channel to the outside world, or was it a piece of Batman supply lines for the prison or personal use? I hope this gets followed up on. As do I. And I mean, we did get a whole cutaway for it, so I'm sure it's going somewhere. But I hadn't even considered that it might be Batman's own stash, his own, you know, back channel, coming in to take care of the prison. I didn't think about that for a moment, and I kind of hope that is what it is. That's very interesting, and I like how subtle that was. You know, it was just like, who would notice that? Who would notice that the date was after Gotham was shut down? You know, I was lucky that one of the Penguin's guys was paying attention and brought it to his attention. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing where that goes. And really, I hadn't even given it a second thought that it might be Batman himself who is utilizing his own connections in order to bring supplies in and maybe even get some stuff out. That's very interesting. And I want to thank you so much for bringing that to my attention, because, like I've said like 5 times in the past 2 minutes, I have been out to lunch of late, missing even the most obvious things, much less things with a little bit of subtlety. But thank you so much, Chris, for writing in. It's always a treat to hear from you. Next up, we got our friend Eric, and he is answering a question that I had posed a few episodes back, where we were talking about the sanity of the Joker. You know, is he sane? Is he crazy? What do you prefer? What's your headcanon tell you? Is he someone who is sane and has full control of his faculties and just does what he does because he likes to? Or is he actually out of his mind and has no control over his actions? Eric has his answer here. He says, in regards to your question about the Joker last episode, I believe that the Joker is sane in regards to knowing what he's doing and what he's planning. I do believe the fall in the chemicals did bring about some type of nervous breakdown and step over the line into insanity, which gives him the no morals approach and no limits to what he does and how intense and violent he can be. It's hard to describe. It's like he's sane and intelligent, but also has nothing holding him back, so he makes great plans. But his insanity seems to give him the ability to carry out those plans without any remorse. But it's not like he's switching personalities or anything. It's the same individual, in my opinion. And it's so great that Eric said that. It was just earlier today. I was flipping through some Wizard magazines. I don't remember which issue it was, but I do know it was the last issue of Wizard that had a spine. I don't know if you all remember that. You know, the Wizard had it was a square-bound magazine. It looked really cool, right? It looks cool on the shelf. I'm looking at my shelf of Wizards right now. I've got multiple shelves, and they've got, you know, beautiful spines here. You can see, you know, they're all numbered. They look great. And then you get to the part where they lost the spine, and it's just like a crappy magazine. And I mean, Wizard toward the end was a crappy magazine, regardless of whether or not it had a spine. But it just looks ugly. You know, because I'm a weirdo about my sorting and organizing, as we've discussed here on the show many, many times. So I've got them on the shelf alongside the spined ones, the spineless ones, and they just look horrible. Anyway, it was the last spined issue, and it was an interview. There was an interview inside with Grant Morrison and Paul Dini. This is obviously around the time where they came on to Batman and Detective, respectively. And the question was posed to them, is the Joker sane? And I want to say it was Morrison who pretty much said exactly what Eric said, where he is sane, but he's also kind of not, like he has no remorse. He does these different things. And, you know, Eric says here, it's not like he's switching personalities. Morrison kind of says that, you know, one, it might have been Dini who said this, where like one day he will be silly. The next day he will be homicidal. The next day he will be psychotic. The next day he will be a sadist. It's all the same personality. It's just like kind of a different presentation. You know, the Joker is many, many things to many people, I guess. And it's just such weird timing that I read that interview this morning, and I'm reading Eric's message now, and there's a lot of congruency there. It's very, very cool. I think I'm kind of on the same board here with Eric and Morrison and Dini, where there is sanity there, but there is something wrong with him where there is no remorse. And you know, rather than ramble on, I just decided to get up and walk over to my little magazine rack here and picked up Wizard number 178 from, let's see if I can find a date here. I don't even know if they put dates on these anymore at this point. August 2006. So, God, 18 years ago. Oh boy, where'd my life go? Anyway, the interviewer asks Dini and Morrison, is the Joker actually completely insane? Or is he in control of his actions? Dini says, I think the Joker knows what he does every step of the way. He's insane because who would ever think of doing what he does? But he is in perfect command of his faculties. The other villains are motivated by baser things like crime or revenge or power. But the Joker always remains outside of Batman's grasp as far as figuring out what he wants. To which Morrison says, I think he's insane, but he likes it. I basically see him the way I wrote about him in Arkham Asylum. He's a 21st century mind in the sense that he changes every day, all the time, to suit whatever new information is coming up. He could be a playful clown because he got up that morning and said, okay, today is the day I'm going to be a playful clown. And the next day he gets up and thinks, okay, I'm going to be a homicidal maniac today because the weather isn't right, or he heard something on the news that convinced him the only people who can survive in the world are homicidal maniacs. He sees his personality as a kind of multiple-choice possibility where he'll adapt to whatever comes at him. I think the Joker has to incorporate all of those elements, and that's what makes him so terrifying. So, there you go. From two guys who took over Batman back in ye old 2006. They're basically on the same page there. It's pretty cool, and this makes me want to dig up more Bat-Scribe interviews to see if this question got asked of them. See if we can get a consensus on the levels of sanity in our Joker. But I'd like to thank Eric so much for chiming in with his thoughts. It was really, really cool to see. And of course, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Joker, on No Man's Land, on Asriel, on the weather, on anything you want to talk about. Please feel welcome to write me at your leisure. You can find me all those different ways. Chris is on infiniteearths.com, chrisandreggie.podbean.com, weirdcomicshistory@gmail.com, and of course, all the socials. And of course, there's the Bada Bin Show on YouTube. But I think that's where we'll wrap things up for today. I'd like to thank you all so much for sharing some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Twist, you better turn that page. When push it
do not fall out of love.